I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? Smells like... victory.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Byrne on the board doing the job as usual here. We have market down a little. Well, actually, it's mixed. Dow's S&P futures are down 675. NASDAQ's up 375 after a horrible day yesterday where we sunk into the close. Like basically all day, and pretty much closed on our lows. It was pretty nasty. We almost were down 100 points in the spoos. Ouch! This morning we've got a couple individual movers at DocuSign, which obviously didn't do what people wanted to do in their earnings. I think it's down $23, $64. So that's and what is it? It's got to be 25%. That's ouch. We're gonna have Kevin. Are you with us?
I am with you. Yeah, I think somebody on DocuSign forgot to sign off on the financial statements.
I think something, yeah. By the way, we're going to have a special Lou for 15 minutes from 6:15 to 6:30 to talk about this PGA thing because, to be perfectly blunt, neither Kevin nor I were qualified to talk about what exactly their contract is and how you can get booted and what kind of a deal that is when you join the PGA and... how they can, you can only be in sanctioned events and how you sign your life away, sort of a, almost like Major League Baseball, it seems, but, anyway.
Well, and we have to consider why this matters to the, PGA so much, and I'll wait till Lou gets on and we can get into it.
I'm gonna say that,
Are you gonna have Joel on, by the way, today?
No, he's Tuesday.
I'd just like to kick around with him, the latest, football recruiting news.
What is it?
Well, Lloyd Carr's grandson, who is, a five-star quarterback prospect, had offers from, Alabama and Georgia and of course, Michigan, chose Notre Dame.
Really?
For his college.
Wow.
So I don't know if, Joel might have expected, but poor Joel. He may be curled up in a fetal position in a corner somewhere.
I think he's decided Michigan's a basketball school.
Yeah, sometimes. I didn't hear so much of that. Michigan's a basketball school when they were having such a good football season last year.
Yeah, I know. So what were you? You were one.
I do the same thing, by the way.
You were like one star, and I was no star. What was that? What were we?
Negative stars. I had to donate stars to the cause.
Matt, you were a zero star. What were you?
I was zero stars.
You were zero.
Yeah, I actually had a little bit of small college recruiting, so maybe I got one.
You got a half a star. Where could you have gone?
Among the places, Lake Forest College in the Chicago area was, hot and heavy on it. Washburn University, where our friend Virginia went in Kansas. St. Joe's in Indiana, in Rensselaer.
One of the guys from Marist that I knew real well went to Augustana, I think. And he was actually, a little All-American.
Yeah, Augustana had a really good program then. I don't know if they still do. I assume, you know, I don't know one way or the other. Augustana, among the small schools, was very, very good back in the day.
Yeah, he ended up coaching at Marist and other places. A nice, real nice guy, Mike Rogowski is his name. Hope he's still with us. And a terrific guy. And I guess he did really well there academically and everything else. He really loved it. Where is that? I don't even know. Somewhere in Illinois, right?
It is in western Illinois, and I am trying to remember because it was on the way to Macomb, because my daughter went to Macomb. And it was in, hold on, I'll tell you.
Well, in Galesburg, is it?
Yeah, Galesburg, yeah, that's right, Galesburg.
I used to go to Macomb when my buddies lived down there, went to school down there, and we actually had a route where I went around Galesburg to not have to go through it, so...
Because it's such a major metropolitan area that you don't want to get stuck in that Galesburg traffic.
Just say we avoided all towns if we could.
Oh, okay.
Just one of those things. So today we have the big time. How does a number become so big and then ignored for 40 years and now it's so big again? The CPI number.
Well, how does it become that? I don't know, because we like, from a reporting standpoint, I think we just like numbers that are shocking.
We like the focus
number. Whether they're useful or not, we like numbers that are shocking. Although we haven't gotten to the total shock, which is, what's the month times 12?
Yeah, well, we haven't managed
that one yet.
No, but you know, this is a. I could actually, I would never want to go if they stuck me on TV. Here's one that you could absolutely argue. Both sides of whether this inflation has peaked, because here's one that if I actually did this in front of people, Kevin, if I actually gave a lecture, I could pull up some numbers. I mean, I'm pretty good at this. Not good at much, but I'm pretty good at this. I could put up some numbers where I reference the money supply growth. And the Fed actually turning a little bit, and I could actually come across with a huge argument that I don't think could really be refuted, even though you and the rest of the guys would try to, which would be good because your argument has to be able to take pot shots. I could actually say that inflation has peaked, and make the absolute argument that if I dug my way back to the University of Chicago where all the monetists were, I don't think any of those guys would disagree with me. However, the knowledge of the damage, because the numbers have been rigged the whole way, absolutely have not peaked. So does that make any sense at all?
I think so. Yeah, that we the assessment of the carnage is an entirely different issue.
Because there's no question that when we were pumping 22% money into the system last year, and we dropped down to early this year down to 8 or 9, now we're down to 3, and actually we've bent on the balance sheet a little bit, but that's not as important as the money supply number. I think we probably peaked 2 months ago. But the runoff is still there. There's way more inflation to come, and we haven't begun to count the real damage. We still are going to put out a report today. I'll look as soon as it comes out when Carl's on, but I'm going to say that we foolishly are going to say home rent and those kinds of things is up 4.5, or probably 4.8 to 5% year over year. And yet everybody knows. Kay Schiller just came out with houses are up 21% and mortgage rates are up 40. So what manner of fourth grader would say that the cost to own your own home is only up 5% when it's
I would say that it could be only up 5%, but that's month over month.
Right. Yeah. Not year over year. They're talking year over year. And I also, to actually confirm my argument, the gas station by me, who is very proud to be the highest prices in the city, went from $6.68 yesterday morning to $5.53 this morning. $6.53. He was down 5 cents last night, and he's down another 5 cents this morning. Not that I noticed. So he's still ridiculously expensive compared to anywhere else, but still, he's nudged down a little. So, like I say, we have peaked, but we have not even begun to look at the carnage, to assess the damage.
Well, and I'm not sure that we've peaked. We plateaued could be a better word.
Well, I'm saying the actual...
Maybe I'm just splitting hairs with this.
Yeah, but I'm saying the actual push behind
but
it...
But really, if you peak, then that would suggest that maybe there's going to be a downturn in prices, and I don't see that happening anytime.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm saying. Oh, no, right? That's what I said. That's why this is a very difficult message to deliver. I think that the actual inflation rate peaked at about 16% last month. The daily rate. So or weekly rate, if you were to take it on a weekly rate, I think we're now back down from 16 to like 15 or 14 and a half. Maybe on our way to 10 or 8, but sure as hell not zero or negative. No. That's not what I'm saying at all. That's why it's a very difficult message to deliver.
Okay.
No, I got you stumped or confused. Or
no. I think I understand what you're trying to say.
That's one.
I'm just not convinced.
Well, what I'm saying is the huge bulge in the money supply that takes 6 to 12 months to work its way through the system was really about 6 to 8 months ago. Okay, so if you look at the December January numbers and say, and they were like 8.5% growth. With no growth in the economy, that's probably the real number we're dealing with right now, 8 to 12.
Okay, so you're taking the money supply as the leading indicator,
right?
And that is flattened, and therefore inflation will flatten at some
now,
point, depending on other factors.
We have Mr. Lua here.
I'm on.
Morning,
how are you, gentlemen? Good morning, Kevin.
Well, who are you referring to as a gentleman, me or Kevin?
Matt, I think.
Or Matt, yeah.
I believe I was using the plural. I catch all of you.
Well,
and it's Friday. It's Friday. I'm being generous.
Well, I talked to Mr. Kevin last night, and I said, "Do you know enough about the PGA and their contract to be able to like ban guys?" And I said, and he said, "No," and I said, "I didn't either." And then we both said almost in unison, "Let's see if we can get Lou." What the hell's going on there, Lou?
Well, you know, golf is one of the least interesting sports ever, as far as I'm concerned, because I'm not old enough to play golf.
Okay.
But the PGA, so when you sign up for a membership with the PGA, when you become a PGA card-carrying member of the Professional Golfers Association, there's a clause in the membership that requires you to, before you play in non-PGA certified events or in events that will conflict with PGA events, you have to get a letter of exclusion, or it's a letter of excuse or whatever that allows you to play with PGA approval. This has not been an issue because there has been no competition for the PGA for decades.
Actually, there has been, Lou.
Possibly in part because of that clause.
Yes.
Actually, you know,
now there are open tournaments like the U.S. Open. That's an open tournament. But there's been no real competition for the PGA as an association for some time. Tom, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that the USGA is a competitor that has the U.S. Open. And used to run the Western Open, but the Western Open has kind of died. That was a Chicago tournament, and they couldn't wait to.
Those were
USGA tournaments, along with the U.S. Amateur and all those other kinds of things. But you could actually, you and I, well, one of us, because we're hacks, we could actually qualify to play in the U.S. Open, and used to be able to qualify for the Western Open without a PGA card.
Well, that's because those are open.
Right.
Those are open tournaments, and the U.S. Open has already said, hey, with or who you play, you can go play in Saudi Arabia, you can go play on that tour, we don't care.
Right.
We are the U.S. Open, and that means we're open to, as long as you qualify with winning a tournament somewhere or with an appropriate score somewhere, you're in. So the PGA has, and it's up in the air. It was for a number of months once the Saudis announced this tour. It was up in the air for a while as to how the U.S. or the PGA would react. This could be really interesting because they're going to try to close out access to their to their tournaments on these, you know, some major players.
Well, so if what's his name, Mickelson had won the Masters last year, which gives him a lifetime exemption, they wouldn't let him in the gate this next year. Is that the idea?
The Masters is a tournament that is not associated with the PGA, as I understand it.
Okay.
It is a wholly private operation. That's why they can do all the goofy stuff that they do in there. So that's a, you know, that's one.
Lou, you got to move over. You got to move to a different spot in the room. We can barely hear you.
Yeah, that's sorry. That, you know, I'm just going to again bash AT&T on the air here, which are just terrible. But anyway, the Masters is a private club. That golf club runs the tournament, and as long as they are the ones running it, PGA has no say in it. They set their own rules for qualifying and everything else.
Okay.
So major tournaments are not affected by this. So why would the players
care? No, there's two. It's only two: U.S. and Masters. The rest of them,
right? No, yeah. There's a bunch of tournaments that are, you know, that are affected.
Right. Can't play in players, the PGA.
Right. You can play in the U.S. Open. You can play in the Masters if you qualify.
And you can probably play in the British.
Yes, you could play in the European tournaments, I assume. I mean, I don't think the Europeans will try to move to exclude this. In fact, I think they would welcome it. So the question now is, do you your comment about what do they care? Apparently they do care, because Nicklaus has already said, listen, I've already, you know, the legal team that's associated with this has already talked to us about the antitrust implications and everything else, and I expect they're going to take some action. So we could have the somewhat, you know, delicious picture of the PGA being dragged into court by LIV or one of the other golf agencies. I assume they would be out calling the legal departments of the U.S. GA and anybody else, and saying, look, these guys are trying to be exclusive. They're blocking their players from participating, and we want the ability to drag them in on antitrust, and we want you to join us.
What is the European Tour saying? Or because it would seem to me they're more directly affected.
I would think they were. So you know, they've been issuing PGA's been issuing exclusion letters or conflict letters for those tournaments, as I understand it, for a while. I mean, it's never been an issue. So if the Saudis want to come in on this, Salman has thrown hundreds of millions of dollars at this thing. The prizes on these tournaments are out of sight. And, you know, the I think the last place player in the tournament that's going this weekend is guaranteed $120,000. So, you know, that ain't chicken feed.
Plus, it's only 3 days, not four.
Right, and it's not as much of a hassle too. It's a shotgun start.
Yeah.
So everybody starts. You know, everybody starts at the same time. They just start at different holes.
Well, you know, it's interesting on that, Lou. I mean, like I say, you're not a golfer, but playing in the morning versus the afternoon, you could have two totally different weather events.
Oh, I know.
Where the guys in the morning are shooting below par, and the guys in the afternoon are struggling to get to par, where if everybody starts at a shotgun, that evens all that out.
Yeah, I mean, there are some interesting innovations that they're going to play with. The question is, do they have enough money to sustain this thing for a couple of rounds, so that you start to get a bona fide television audience that will watch it? And I mean, I don't know if you've got DeChambeau and Dustin Johnson. Quite frankly, if what's her face Gretzky shows up for her husband's tournaments, I'll watch that.
Well, yeah, the weird part.
I watch that. I mean,
that man is a big pig.
did you guys check Yahoo Sports last night? They were. I don't know, they must like the PGA or something, but I'm not accusing them of that, but they said that the big talking guy is Greg Norman. And they said that they're describing this thing as all kinds of people there, and evidently they were giving away tickets in the parking lot. I mean, the description of like the greatest ever, you know, of all the stuff that was going on didn't match at all if you actually walked around and looked what was going on. It was like professional wrestling in that regard,
or the USFL.
So how does a guy like, Sergio Garcia, where he's clearly a member of both tours, just whenever he decides to play in Europe and not here, he has to get a letter for that weekend from the PGA or what?
I don't know how they do the interaction, but if there is a conflict, I think he can play on the European tour as long as there's not a conflict with a PGA event.
There's an event every week, isn't there? Pretty much.
I
have a few questions about this though. And I don't know that you know the answers, but I think they're the ones that I would raise if I were looking at this particular case and saying, okay, so what's the first thing in the contract? Well, you have to get permission to play outside of the PGA. And so they're denying permission this time. Why would the PGA want to deny permission? One is because it's going to bid up prize money, and they don't want to do that. It's just like every other sports, quote, ownership group. They want to limit what they pay out if they can. And part two is they want to limit competition for their events. They don't want to grant competition. So that's why they would want to deny it. So my questions would be, one, have they denied access to other tournaments in the past, or has it always been a rubber stamp? Then you may be walking into anti-competitive practices if they always say, "Okay, thanks for the application, stamp it approved, and send it on." The other part I would have is I'd like to know what the contract says about, specifically what your agreement with the PGA says. Does it say you must get permission and it won't be unreasonably withheld?
That's a good question, I don't know. It would not surprise me, Kevin, if you were a big star, you know, like one of the real hitters, that you could get a conflict exemption whenever you wanted it. And if you're one of the little guys, you can't. It wouldn't surprise me if that was the case at all, but I just don't know.
Of approval and denial will be an interesting part of the case.
Well, Kevin,
I do know is this has not been an issue until now, because, like I said, there's never been a credible competing entity that could pull people, you know, pull the big stars away from the tour.
Would be a threat to the PGA.
Well, you've seen it happen before,
or its objectives. It may not pull them out of the PGA. It was not a threat to pull them out of the PGA until now, until the PGA took its actions. But it was a threat to the PGA's business model.
Well, that's probably why you had the skins, and it was always on Thanksgiving, right? Because there was no other tournament. I'm sure those guys had to get. I'm not sure, but I'm guessing they had to get. Okay for that, but that only pushed the PGA's brand by having Palmer and those guys playing at Thanksgiving.
I mean, you can see the insidious nature of this. As long as you are the only game in town, high-profile events with your stars that don't take revenue away from your planned events don't hurt you a bit. That's right. You can exhibit, you know, the royal largesse and say, yes, of course you can. Of course you can play. Now this is a real hit, and to people who are more in tune with the golfing world, this is if you look on the sports channels that cover this is a big deal.
Well, it's a big deal if they start lapping 20-30 people off. You know, Luke, can you I want to take another slice at this after the break if you can hang for 10 more minutes. I don't want to do the whole hour at golf, but I have just a question on...
Please, don't.
No, I will not. But we're going to... SP Futures down 4 and NASDAQ Futures up 12. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures now up 250, and NASDAQ futures up 35. We're going to be flopping around here before this number, but we're just flopping a little bit after yesterday's horrible day. Dow futures down 81, individual stocks in the Dow. I don't really see anything down all that much. That's why these futures are down so much, but they are. Maybe because the stocks up ran down on a close last night or something after the future did something weird. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei down 422. It's 1.5%. Shanghai up 45, 1.4%. Hang Seng down 62.3. Alibaba shares up again. This stock, I can honestly say I'm absolutely useless when it comes to talking about this stock. I don't understand it at all regarding the what you even own, why it's listed. Where is Jack Ma in jail? I have no idea there. It's one I don't even want to talk about. But they're up today. Dex. Well, I already said down. Well, no, I didn't. They're down 203, 1.4%. FTSE down 94, 1.3. CAC around down 92. That's 1.5%. So they're down over 1% across the board in Europe. Bonds, 3.04 on the 10-year rate, so that's unchanged. The Bund, minus 3 basis points, 1.40. Japan unchanged at 0.26. Oil, up 95 cents, 122.46. Brent up 112, 124.19. Natural gas up 7 cents back over $9, 903. So the thing must have moved 50 cents yesterday. That's unbelievable. RBOB up 3 cents to 430. That's as high as I've seen it. The best spread you can normally get between RBOB and your tank or the pump is probably 80 cents. So 5.10 is probably the bottom line, the best you're going to get anywhere. Yesterday, get a load of this. Dow was down 638, that's almost 2%. S&P down 98, 2.4%. NASDAQ down 332, 2.7%. We have to have one great number today to make up for that. Gold down 10 bucks. The more inflation we get, the more gold goes down. Down 10 bucks to 1842. Silver down 30 cents, 21.51. Copper down 3 cents to 434. And we've got Bitcoin down 73 bucks, 29,999. So slightly under 30,000. Matt, what do you got for us, Family Weather Sports?
Good morning. Currently 6:35 a.m. on Friday, June 7th, 2022. Let's get into sports real quick. NHL, Stanley Cup 2022 playoffs, East Final. Tampa Bay Lightning win Game 5 against New York Rangers. Game 6 tomorrow night, catch that at 7 p.m. In MLB, yesterday Dodgers beat Sox 11-9, and Diamondbacks beat Reds 5-4. Cubs are no show yesterday. Weather in Chicago, currently Chicago partly sunny, 58 degrees, a high of 77 and a low of 58. In Phoenix, mostly cloudy, 88 degrees, a high of 113. With that, there is an excessive heat warning in Phoenix and a low of 88 degrees. Now for traffic in Chicago, traffic eastbound on the Eisenhower between Wolf Road and Des Plaines Avenue. Traffic eastbound on the Kennedy between Cumberland and Lawrence. Traffic westbound on the Dan Ryan between 43rd and the Jane Byrne Interchange. And finally, traffic northbound in Stevenson between Route 171 and South Pulaski Road. That's all we got, Chief. Back to you.
Gentlemen, I think what we're talking about, we've covered a lot of the thing with the PGA and at least brought up the right questions. But I have a more of a question. How does the PGA, I guess where I'm going with this, is one of the guys who used to be one of the gentlemen who was a client years ago from PTI, his son was the head of the Phoenix Thunderbirds. Now, those are the guys that, on the local level, organize and run the Phoenix Open, which, from what I understand, loves the idea that I think they get more gallery spectators on the course like any other tournament. They always did. They still do. And what about...
I've been there for the Phoenix Open in Phoenix. It is a four-day drunk fest.
Well,
it's warm, it's nice, the weather's good. I remember talking to my Uber driver when I was getting into town, and she said, "You're the first person I've picked up all day who isn't just totally slobbering drunk." And I said, "Why is that?" And she said, "Because they're all going to the golf tournament."
Well, I know my relatives.
When's that?
Kevin wants to go.
I've got my son there. I can pick and choose my spot to visit.
It's the earliest. It's the first tournament like in the U.S., isn't it?
Oh, okay.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's there for the it's a cold weather in the north type of tournament.
Well, and I know my relatives live in the town right next to Dublin, Ohio, and the whole town damn near shuts down for the 8 weeks before the Nicklaus's tournament, whatever that one's called. But I guess what I'm saying is, it's not just the PGA. Do either one of you know the relationship in terms of prize money and who gets what, who gets live gate and other things, between like the PGA and the Thunderbirds or the PGA and the people in Dublin, or actually if they had an open here or something? I mean, what do the local people provide? Do they get the live gate? Do they get the concessions? I mean, at some point this is going to affect them and they're going to say, what the bleep? If, you know, 50 people aren't showing up.
Well, yeah, I think it will. I suspect, and I don't know this, and maybe Lou does, but I suspect it's a similar model to what we've seen with bowl games, where, you know, there's payouts and so on, and there's probably a certain amount of licensing that they have to do, you know, with the PGA. In other words, they got to kick up tribute to the PGA as well.
Well, who comes up with the prize
money? The other thing that these PGA players are supposed to get whenever they appear outside of the PGA regime is a media release letter from the PGA.
What does that mean?
It means that they are not supposed to be playing. Their media rights are controlled by the PGA. And they have to get a release of media rights from the PGA before they can go play in these other tournaments to be televised and all of that.
So,
yeah, again, not surprising. They're right. Just guarding their agreements that they have with everybody else. So it I could see. I mean, under the question is under what circumstances will they deny permission? It's one thing to say I'm denying permission because what was that famous house of prostitution in Nevada, the legalized prostitution?
Oh, the Mustang Ranch.
Like the Bundy Ranch or something?
The Mustang Ranch.
The Mustang Ranch. So if the Mustang Ranch wanted to host a tournament in Nevada and had all of its sex workers out on the course, introducing the players at the tees and all that kind of, you could see the PGA saying no, that's not the association that we want, and so we deny permission. That's protecting the brand, and I'm sure that's the logic behind what they're doing. The problem is if they have otherwise, if they don't have an argument about protecting their brand, like the quality of play, the quality of the host, or anything like that, then I think they're going to have a hard time justifying their denials for these players.
I think, wait a minute, the Mustang Ranch either was or tried to be listed on the New York Stock Exchange. They're legit.
Yeah, they're totally legit. Sounds legit.
It makes me wonder, back in history, nobody went
let
over...
Let me just, since we're running down this rabbit hole, and given the Bunny Ranch reference earlier by Chief, I think this
Mustang,
is a, this
Mustang.
Is in context. Well, there was a bunny place too, but
well, there might have been all kinds of.
I actually, one of my previous employers, who shall remain nameless, but did a lot of international work and immigration work, and I will. I'm sorry to say that I assisted in the preparation of H-1B visas. Actually, they were a slightly different category, not the H-1Bs, but a slightly different category for a group of, shall we say, art movie film stars to come in from Eastern Europe and other places on the grounds that they had skill sets that Western art movie stars did not possess.
Wow.
And I will leave that to your imagination.
And offline, because this is a family show, we probably
That's
should
right.
have a discussion about what those skills
were. Yeah, what those
are.
Skills were.
I was part of that. We were bringing them in for a certain men's magazine publishing house that's centered in Chicago.
Oh God! Well, just as a quick aside, if you ever want to see something absolutely fascinating, and I wonder if Netflix has it or somebody. There's the History Channel had like about a 5 or 6 hour deal on the history of pornography. It was spectacular to watch. Just in terms of how they worked the law in this place and that place and who did what and how the mob was involved. They didn't show you any pornography, so you can watch it. You're not going to see anything.
Well, that's kind of pointless.
But I mean, just the history and the business and how the business dovetailed with the law and which way they, in this town they were doing this and it was 8 millimeters here and they're going after somebody here and not there. The curiosity, if you like the way regulation and kind of steamy industries interact, it's pretty fascinating.
I would recommend to you a book called Last Call, which is the history of the prohibition movement in America up through the rescinding of prohibition in the 1930s. It is the same kind of thing, Chief. Fascinating. As something that we all know is bad for you and was at the time enacted a real problem, and yet something that was so popular that there was no way the law was going to contain it.
Well,
anyway,
last thought. We'll let you go. Back in the day, when we were youngsters, somewhere Arnie Palmer was the big star. Boy, he was my favorite golfer. But I think in the early '60s or something, nobody from here was going over to play at the British Open. And all of a sudden, one year, Arnie Palmer said, "You haven't really won all the tournaments you needed to win until you won the British Open. That's back when the prize money was like $1,500 or something. And guys would have like three sweaters on and three pairs of socks. They played these cold, crazy places. And he went over there and like took some guys with him. I wonder if it wouldn't have been Ernie Palmer, where he was the most popular guy on the tour, if the PGA would have let him do that.
Well, it's a good question.
Yeah, I think earlier, if they look carefully at these media rights and conflicting events rights letters that they've been releasing, I'm guessing you'll find that for the major players, they have no trouble getting those releases. But for the minor guys, they probably are pretty tight on them.
Well, the British Open usually is on it's on like a summer weekend, right? So there had to have been another tournament that weekend that he said, I'm not going to go play. I'm going to go play in Europe instead. Or maybe he had to leave early enough in those days to remiss two tournaments. And I bet they were wondering whether they should let people do that. Now would they pretty much schedule around it, right?
I think so, yes. It's one of the Grand Slams.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it was back then. I remember the winner getting like $1,500 the first year he went over there, and which was not a lot of. I bet it didn't cover your airfare.
Sure it was $1,500 and all the baked beans for breakfast you could eat.
Yeah. Because I remember him saying it. He went over there. How the first thing he did after the first round, he was freezing. He had to go buy like sweaters. He said he was in the pro shop buying stuff, and he's already Palmer. It was, you know, pretty scary. Anyway, Lou, thank you very much. As this winds out, we'll talk more about it next week, I'm sure. What do you got going this weekend? Anything crazy?
No, I'm going to go out to the shooting range and kill a few paper targets.
Oh, there you go. Was this rifle, pistol?
Both.
What do you get? How many things do you bring? Weapons?
I don't know. As many as I care to shoot. Usually one rifle and a couple of pistols.
Do you have a Winchester with the big handle like the rifleman?
No, that's one of my goals is to get a lever action rifle at some point.
They're available. They're selling the big round handle ones.
Right, but they're not, you know, they're not cheap, and the rifle I want is a 45-70, so those are expensive bullets and or expensive rounds and everything else. But that would be sort of my ultimate purchase right now.
By the way, when you guys go hiking, I got the gun for you. Did you ever see that Derringer, the snake killer?
Yes, I did, but I don't carry a gun for snakes. I carry a gun for bears.
Ah.
That's chambered a little differently.
Actually, they have a Derringer for bears too, believe it or not. It's got some huge army round in one of the chambers. I was reading this thing, I was fascinated by it.
That would be a hard one to shoot because after you'd practiced with it once and it had bruised your hand sufficiently, you'd be very nervous about pulling the trigger again, even if a bear was looking at you. At least I would be.
Remember Kathy Durbin? Kathy drags me to this handgun class. Before she said it's in what the hell's the name of it? In Indiana. What's the town?
Gary?
No. What are you? University. There's a big university there. I'm brain dead. I'll think of it. But she goes, it's there. Well, it turns out it wasn't. It was like 30 miles south, out in the middle of God nowhere. And I'm like, we sure we want to go into this place? Of course, every guy in there's got his the full outfit on, the farmer jeans and the NRA hat and everything. Turns out they love us. They want us to join the club. They're the first people from Chicago they've ever, because Kathy's very personal. So the guy shows me his concealed carry gun, and the thing's plastic. And he goes, yeah, you put this right in your pocket. He goes, there's no safety. You don't need it. This is the first time I've ever even held a gun at this place. And the guy goes, this thing... But you don't have to worry about it. It's such a heavy trigger draw, you're never going to shoot yourself. He says, the only problem with it is you can't practice. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, there's like a 45 in the damn thing. And he says, yeah, if you shoot this, it's only if somebody like jumps you, it's close quarter. And if you pull a trigger, you're either going to bruise your hand or break it. So because the gun weighed like a couple ounces. It was just all bullet. And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah. But if you're actually going to put in your pocket, if you're in a bad spot and somebody jumps on you, this is what you want. And I'm going, okay then. So There you
so,
go.
So you put that on your wish list.
Beretta, I think it was Beretta made a really lovely lightweight 12-gauge shotgun that was terrific for shooting, you know, because you were carrying around the course. It wasn't nearly as heavy. But I found, I fired it one time on one round, and I found that after about 25 or 30 rounds through the gun, your shoulder was aching because it was so light.
Is that why people want to get the padded shirts and everything?
Well, yeah, and even with padded shirts. I mean, the recoil from the thing was such that, you know, normally the gun absorbs a lot of that recoil in a shotgun, but these featherweight guns, as I said, beautiful gun, but the thing absorbing the recoil was your shoulder. And a 12-gauge kicks.
Are you going to confide with Eliani when she designs the Stocks and Jacks concealed carry clothing line?
I'd be honored.
Oh, God. Lou, on that note, buddy, have a nice weekend. Kevin and I are going to talk CPI here for a bit, and then we'll have Carl on. Interesting, but good stuff. Thank you for calling in.
It's always an honor to be on the phone with Kevin. So you guys take care of yourselves this weekend.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Kevin. You might want to listen in for the rest, because we're going to talk to Kevin about this. He's got back from a seminar that I find amazingly interesting. And Kevin, tell everybody where you were and what the deal was.
Well, I was at a seminar that was all about basically all about assessment in education. And
go ahead. We lost Kevin. Well, he'll call back. You must have dropped the boat of him. The boat of him, as they say. SP futures are unchanged. Actually, now they're down a dollar. NASDAQ futures is up 27. Yeah, Kevin was out in Providence, and he was telling me a little bit about it last night. When he comes back on, I'm sure he'll fill us more in. But it has to do with when you targeting education, and targeting is such a rotten word, but it's having to do with knowing your student body, and if people are, you know, like I was at the University of Chicago at age 21 or 22, right out of school with nothing, not a care in the world. That's one group you need to deal with. But if you're trying to teach a lot of, say, single mothers that have two kids at home, sometimes you have to do it a little differently. And, maybe your hours are differently or your subjects are a little different or things like that. And almost when you use the word targeting, targeting is really a bad word, but it's almost, you know, maybe, I mean, I've mentioned a few times that the people who went to school at night at the University of Chicago were marked on the same curve as the people who went to campus. Well, that wasn't fair. And how does somebody who's out of school 10 years and is working all day, and how the hell is he going to compete with me? You know, just out of school, everything fresh. And you wake up and you roll over. It's the first thing you do during the day. You don't have any work cares at all. So it has to do with, I mean, you really want to be effective when you educate people. And this whole seminar was all about that. Kevin was. Did you try calling him, Matt? We have Kevin? We don't have Kevin. Well, all right, I'll tell you a little bit more about it, because he's one, he kind of filled me in a little bit. But it's a way of trying to figure out how exactly you're doing. So you don't just, you know, like the Chicago school system, where you don't just take, okay, we're going to give a standardized test to eighth graders to figure out if anybody learned. It's way more of a deep dive into figuring out how exactly, you know, how effective are you? Do you need to change your program in areas where there may not be families? Can you send kids home with homework where you think the parents might help if the parents don't even know, you know, haven't been to school in ages and have no access to what you're even doing, or maybe don't even know the language? And it wasn't so much about how do you do all this stuff, but how do you figure out whether you're being effective or not? And I found that from what you know, Kevin was telling me, and I'm kind of surprised he fell off here and he must have had a call for work. What's our 800? Are you sure 800 number is working, Matt? No, we seem to have lost Matt. But anyway, individual stocks moving today. Like I said, DocuSign's down 20-some dollars. We actually got it down. It's only on down 21. It was down 23, trading 65.72. The rest of the stocks are, we're in an absolute waiting mode here, and I'll kick up the economic calendar to give everybody just what Well, actually, there's an article here by Jeff Cox I was reading earlier I was going to dig into when Carl came on, but I can do that earlier. It has to do with where people actually think the numbers are going to come in. And this is it has to do with consumers, whether they're changing their eating, whether they're changing their shopping habits. And I'm going to say that everybody does that. I mean, anybody who listens to the show knows that the thing that fascinates me about economics clearly is the fact that every decision everybody makes, it used to be referred to in Chicago as a dollar vote. If you decide you're going to go to this movie, you're voting for the success. You're voting for the success of like that movie. And the money you spend there, you can't spend someplace else. Now, if you are incredibly wealthy and you can spend whatever you want, well, whatever you spend doesn't go into savings. So whatever it is, wherever you push it, it's not going somewhere else. Even if you're a billionaire and you spend, you know, $5 on a beer someplace, that's $5 that isn't going into savings. So no matter who you are, there's literally millions and millions of economic decisions being made in this country and probably billions worldwide every hour. And that's why it's so difficult to get your hands around the neck of the economy and say this is working, that's working. And when you hear people say stuff like, well, once gas gets over $5, people stop, you know, make decisions. That's total BS. Because somebody somewhere is going to make a decision at $3.98 versus $3.97 or $3.99 versus $3.98. Or some guy who might even be a billionaire doesn't want to give his money to the oil companies and jumps in the wife's little car instead of his big SUV or whatever and goes to the store to buy his six-pack. And he uses a cupful less of gas than he would have in his SUV. So these decisions are free flowing and continual. They're not. Kevin, did you fall in the lake, bud?
No. Let's see. It's got to. You know, everything was fine until Lou came along.
Yep, I would agree with that. So I was mentioning.
So we're blaming Lou.
I was mentioning what that your seminar was all about, judging your outcomes so you can change how you deliver stuff to so it works with different people. And judging how you're doing go ahead.
It's actually pretty standard quality management continuous improvement type of thinking. When you think about it, it just gets into education. But as you look at it, you know, at the most basic level, you have to assess your teaching effectively. So, for example, I'm teaching an informatics course this fall. There are three exams built into the course. Well, I'm having them take the first exam as a pretest, and so they get credit for doing it. I don't care what the score is. I'm just trying to get a baseline for where they are, and then, you know, come a couple of weeks from now, they'll take the exam again. Well, if somebody percent on the pretest and then got 85 on the exam, I probably did a good job teaching, or at least I, in a combination with the material, did well with that student. By the same token, if it's 20% now and 20% in a couple of weeks, then we haven't done anything. And if it was 85% now and 85% in a couple of weeks, I'd say, well, so didn't do anything there, but hey, everybody's cool because it's a B. But, you know, we wouldn't know in those cases because we don't have the baseline set. And this is how it would work in a manufacturing plant or something. You set your baseline, but then you start slicing and dicing it a little bit. So it's more than just a little bit of improvement. Now you start slicing it up and saying, you know, how are we doing? If we were to do our measuring across racial lines, if we were doing males and females, if we were doing adult learners and kids out of high school, if we were doing kids out of high school and we looked at which high schools they attended and what the demographics were there, if we and you can really drill deeply into this just like you would in a manufacturing business, you know, trying to manage the quality of your production. And what you do is once you identify them, then you have to turn and start developing strategies that say, how can I reach this? And, you know, part of that is also learning styles. You, every
Where did he go?
I think he fell in the lake again.
Yeah, he's Mr. Communication too. But it's fascinating. But I wonder if he comes back. Well, I want to ask him, how does this run afoul of any kind of the minute you say you're gonna treat different groups differently to be more effective, you wonder how much of kickback you're gonna be from any kind of group saying, well, no, you can't treat unmarried people different than other people, even though the reason why you're treating them differently is because they don't have as much time or whatever. You excel. I mean, there could be a lot of reasons why you do stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with whether you're trying to be prejudiced or not. I mean, so you wonder, Matt, if he can even, how you go down that road. But
just different privileges for what sort of life you're living,
Yeah. Oops. I think I think what happened is when Lou was bitching about AT&T, AT&T's killing us here.
I think they're purposely sabotaging the show today.
I think they are too, all because of Lou. All right, well, you want to go to break? We come back, we'll do Carl.
Sounds great.
SP Futures down 250, NASDAQ Futures up 23. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. Matt Byrne on the board after Lou totally torpedoed AT&T there. Kevin just texted me that he talked for a whole two minutes, really good stuff, to realize nobody was hearing him. So S&P Futures bad. Down 2, NASDAQ Futures up 21. We've got DocuSign down 21.50. That's a full 25%. And we also have Netflix down $9 as Goldman Sachs turned them into a hold to a sell. Sell! Carl, how are you?
Well, I'm doing okay. You got me on the road in a rest area, pulled over to have a little conversation today, and then watch everybody try to make excuses for the CPI report.
Yeah, well, I went through I won't do it again. I went through a thing earlier that if somebody stuck me on a podium in front of a class and I had a chance of doing a little more research on the numbers, I'm going to say that I would give a lecture that nobody has any idea what the hell I'm talking about, because I think if you actually trace, actually I think you probably will, if you actually trace the numbers and the money supply and the Fed's activities, I think we actually did on a month-to-month or week-to-week basis, I think we peaked a couple of months ago at probably about a 17% rate, and we're coming down a little bit, but since we're still not counting it right, and we're not even looking at the carnage really, it's going to continue on, even though I think the prices aren't going to go down at all, but I think the increases have sort of peaked because the Fed has actually behaved a lot better the last 4 or 5 months. And we're not pushing 20% anymore, but we're not doing anything to stop the high levels. I think the increases, let's put it this way, the rate of increase, I think, has peaked. Would anybody understand what in God's name I'm talking about?
Well, yeah, basically you're saying a second derivative has rolled.
Yes.
I mean, that may or may not be true. I mean, certainly for this specific cycle, it probably is. The problem, as I like to point out and that people don't like to hear, is that every bit of this starts with what Congress appropriates and doesn't tax first.
Right.
And so there is no indication from either side of the aisle that there isn't going to be another surge of this as soon as the next set of, continuing resolution or, whatever nonsense you have that goes through that comes around. And, now they're all focused on, well, let's see if we can find some way to get 60 votes in the Senate on the, on the bright, shiny object of the day, which ignores the fact that there's probably a trafficking, whether human or drug, involved with that situation down in Texas. But, we can't bother with that because it's a bright, shiny object, and it's a great polarizing political thing, especially with an election coming up.
Oh, yeah.
So, but Congress will shift back to, in short order, where's the next set of grab bag games, right?
Well, that's kind of, you're not disagreeing with me. What I'm saying is, I think the 16% numbers are a sense of the past because they were pushing, 22% money supply growth at us for 6 months. That has stopped, but I'm with you. It doesn't mean that the 10% and 12% money supply growth isn't going to be with us for a while, which means that we flatten out at 10% inflation, which is not so hot.
Well, it's not just not so hot. I mean, as I've pointed out before on the show and elsewhere, in the 1970s and early 1980 timeframe, when we went through a, a similar state like this, we had the second earner, typically a woman, who is now in the workforce, was not. And so we had a buffer, if you will, to be able to absorb this within the economy. It wasn't a lot of fun, and it caused a tectonic shift in how we look at things. But that's not there now. So you keep at this for very long, and you start to see demand destruction show up all over the place in places where you think it wouldn't. And it's kind of interesting. There's cracks in this dam that are already showing up. I've been out on vacation here, and we're already seeing it in places. Right. I mean, I would have expected that this, this RV campground that we were at, which is a fairly high fountain place with some cabins and stuff like this, would have just been absolutely jammed. And yet, it was not.
Right. Well, you're seeing it. I think, Carl, you have been probably the most eloquent of the people that we've had on talking about the how many years people were behind in their raises because of offloading the stuff to China and slave and child and cheap labor and all this kind of Mexico and God knows where else. We almost have 20 years to catch up on without inflation. Which is, so now on top of everything, nobody getting a raise at all. Now we've gotten, prices essentially doubling a lot of stuff in 2 years. And now, we're not talking about somebody going from $10 an hour to like 14 or 13 and saying you're doing okay, you got a 40% raise. We're talking about if that person's not making 20, they're not even close.
Well, you know, when you look at what's happened in certain areas of the country, certain high cost areas, okay, and I was just in Jackson Hole, okay, which is kind of the, you know, I mean, you want to talk about the rich boy playground hipster joint of the United States. You know, that's where the Fed holds their conference every year, right?
Yep.
So, it probably doesn't get any worse than that. I mean, by the way, just as a reference point, an under 1,000 square foot place is $500,000 out there.
Okay. Did you go to the, Cowboy Bar, the Fly Me to the Moon Saloon?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't go into the Cowboy Bar, but there was another one that was right across the street that was pretty good. They had a nice tap wall, and you know, but everything's expensive. Everything's crazy. And the problem is, all you know, the Albertsons there, you know, grocery store, there are people that work in that store. Where do they live?
Yeah, well...
Okay, well, this is the basic problem. I mean, you know, Whole Foods had signs out front, you know, now hiring, you know, $17 to $20 an hour. And I look at my kid and my girlfriend, I said, $40,000 a year? You can't live here on $40,000.
Oh, God, no. No, you're packed in a trailer with three other people. Well,
yeah,
and you're,
yeah,
you're,
I mean, there's just no possible way to do it, right? And so, you just look at the cost of everything else. Coin laundry in there, which we needed to use because, you know, we're camping, right? You know, you get your clothes muddy going on hikes and stuff like this. These guys, you know, everybody in there, not one American, not one English-speaking person in the place other than us. But here's the thing. $650 to run a load of laundry.
That's a lot of quarters. God.
Well, I'm like, you know, and again... So not only are you displacing these people, then you're screwing them because they need to have clean clothes.
How do you put... That's 26 quarters. Where the hell do you put them?
Well, it has a card reader on it. So you don't have the... I mean, it's got, they got a change machine on the wall, too, but there's also a card reader on there, so, you know, you can wave your magic plastic at it.
That is so scary. I mean, the thought of ever having a card reader on a washing machine... I guess I was
blown away by it. I mean, they're very, trust me, the place is very nice. So it's very clean, you know, nice machines, high quality stuff, all this. But $650 to run a little laundry.
That is special. Wow. I can't even, but you know, and one of the ladies, here, the, wife of one of the guys who works there, and they got some kind of a roof problem or an electric problem. And we get into it because, you know, whatever, she's not the easiest to deal with, but, she was saying that now for somebody to come out and look at the job, they want $90. And,
yep.
And you know, but if you look at what people are paying for, God help you, if you come from Indiana over to Skyway, I mean, it's, you know, $580 each way. For somebody that spent, you know, for a tradesman to spend 2 hours coming to your place, looking around, going back home, giving you an estimate, I don't think $90 is out of line, to be honest with you.
No, and you know, you just take a look at, like, you know, the IRS, I don't know what their reimbursement rate is on mileage right now, but, I think somebody said it was like 58.5 or something like this. And I said, someone mentioned it on my form, and I said, you know, if you've got a truck, there is no way that you're not taking a loss on that at
all
that price. I mean, you are absolutely, and so if I was an employee and you told me, you know, go do this and, you know, you get the reimbursement, I'd tell you to go pound sand.
Well, Kyle, what, if for instance, I mean, we don't have other than, you know, some, public employee unions, I don't know of anybody, I honestly don't know of a soul down here in a financial district, what's left of it, who has any kind of a COLA clause. I mean, at Pullman, everybody, all the hourly workers did. I didn't. But I mean, where does any kind of, other than the Chicago teachers, who the hell's got a COLA clause? I mean, so, you're not, I mean, this is just walking up. But you know, we went through times, and you probably know more about the tax law than I did. I remember when I was a youth, I used to do some people's taxes back in Reagan's day, make a few bucks. But, we had, what, 15 or so brackets, maybe more. And when the guy who started when I went to Pullman, if you're making 17 grand and when I left you're making 21 after 3 years of 10% inflation, you're not ahead of the game at all, but you were up three brackets. you were given a much higher percentage of your scratch to the government than you were before. And I'm looking, we're back to like, what, five or six brackets. If you happen to be the you know, Mr. T, I pity the fool. If you started this mess 2 years ago making 46 grand, say, and now we're going to have 3 years of 10% inflation, and all of a sudden you're making 55 2 years from now, and the Obamacare kicks in or kicks out, what, over 50, and if you go up one or two brackets, you are in a world of hurt compared to where you were 2 years ago, even if you get the 15, 20% raise to go along with it. You're paying more in taxes. And, oh, by the way, you're now paying for your insurance, which is going up dramatically. I mean, you're not...
Well, it's the, you know, when Obamacare passed, that was the point at which I said, I am not going to do independent contract work or any kind of work for anyone beyond the point at which I, you know, I hit those phase-out levels. And the thing, I mean, I can afford to do that, okay? I work by choice because, you know, I had a fortuitous circumstance to run a company and be able to, you know, to do that sort of thing. Most people can't. The problem that you have there is that if you're an entrepreneur, you're an independent contractor, it is, once you get past about 35 or into your, you know, into the 40-year-old range where the price, you know, on healthcare insurance is, just gets exorbitantly stupid. And then Obamacare jacked it up even more by a double or better. You get to the point where the second $20,000 you earn is taxed at nearly 100%.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And so it, when you go from, you know, from I make $20,000 a year to make $40,000 a year, you actually don't make any more money. Because that phase out starts to get you as a single person at about 24 grand.
Well, the only way you're going to do it is if the $40,000 job includes hospitalization. Then it's like you're making 60.
Well, but I'm saying if you make, you know, so, but think about this, because, it, you know, when I was an entrepreneur, when you're just getting started, there, you don't know what you're going to have at the end of the year.
Right.
You know, you don't have a clue. All right, there's, you know, some years are great, some years are terrible, and it sometimes it doesn't work out at all. Well, basically, what you're telling all these people is there's absolutely no reason for you to take this risk because you're going to work your tail off with that second $20,000, and you don't get to keep any of it.
What I'm going to ask this question in two parts. Is there a built-in escalation inflation clause in Obamacare? I'm going to guess the answer is no, but I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. And if not, is that done on purpose just to screw the population?
So it's not an escalation clause based on the CPI, but it is based upon the federal poverty level.
Okay.
So that's where the phase outs. That's the phase out is a calculation based on the federal poverty level and the size of your household, of course.
Okay, so there's a little bit of a give. So if we have 3 years of 10% inflation on average, which I think we're going to have or already have had, what do you get any? What's the benefit of the guy right at 50 grand? Is he get any benefit? Not really, huh?
No, he's not getting anything. And the problem is that it's, you know, of course that down to federal poverty level, but then again, you would expect that there's going to be forward wage pressures that go along with this, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of this gentleman that I work with, and I've said before, he's a guy, Carl, that when you first met him, you know, it's like, here I am, you know, a grumpy dude from the south side of Chicago, and he's a young Jewish kid from New York, and I'm thinking, how are we going to work together? You know what? It's worked out spectacularly. He comes from an area that I don't. He comes up with information. He's like you. He comes up with information that I would never have found, and we become really good friends. And we've got a great working relationship. And he knows a lot of people in the industry, and I know a lot about options. And he can't wait to talk to me because he learns about options. And it's been an absolutely tremendous thing. You would never have guessed what happened, right? But yesterday he's telling me that when he first came out of school, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, maybe he was selling a hospice insurance, and said the Cadillac policy was like $100,000.
And he said,
he goes, now it's $400,000.
Yeah, it's the cost, the medical complex, and the parasitic nature of what has happened. I mean, there's a lot of people that have a lot of tinfoil theories regarding to, you know, what occurred with the jabs and all the, you know, all the crazy advocacy around COVID and everything else. My answer to this is very simple. It's just money. That's all it is. Actual health doesn't matter to these people. There was an article on Fox News, I think it was 2 days ago, that said, oh, we actually now admit that the reason most people are fat is not because they're eating too much, it's because they're eating carbohydrates. Well, I wrote an article in 2016 that basically went through what I did to stop being a fat SOB and become a much less fat SOB.
But still,
it played out over time, and that it had been stable for more than a decade. Okay, now at that point when I wrote the article, it had been 5 years. Now it's more than 10. And it was very simply, get all that garbage out of your, stop putting it down your pie hole. Okay, and yet, what we were told for 20, 30 years by every single dietitian, doctor, whatever, is, by God, do not eat animal products. You must eat vegetable oils. You should eat all this, all this processed crap along with all these carbohydrates. Well, we knew if you were diabetic before there was insulin, if you did not get the carbohydrates out of your diet, you died.
Well, I remember when I was very, very young, everybody hit you up with how bad butter was for you.
How many times have we had this go back and forth? Butter's terrible for you. Eggs are good. Eggs are awful. You're going to die if you eat eggs. Cheese is good food. No, cheese is horrible stuff. You should not eat any cheese. It's been one thing after another with this. And the reality is that there is a real incentive within the medical system to reach for anything that has a big check associated with it. And so a pill bottle has a check associated with it.
Well, I'm going to say margarine put more people in the grave than anything from that generation.
Well, don't eat the Doritos.
Yeah.
Nobody makes any money there, right?
Yeah.
You know, and the thing that's interesting about it is, and then, of course, what happens is, you know, the doc says, do this. He says, you know, exercise more, eat less. He doesn't tell you to get the carbs out of your diet. In fact, he tells you to get the meat out of your diet, the fats. And so then a year goes by, you come back, you're 5 pounds heavier again, and then he blames you, and in truth, what has happened is that you poisoned your metabolic system with what you were eating, not how much, and as a result, you're always ravenously hungry, and you tell me how many people have the willpower to resist that on a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week basis. Zero.
Sorry, too.
Right, and you know what? You change what goes down the pie hole. I wake up in the morning. I don't want anything to eat until about lunchtime.
Well,
I'm not hungry.
I remember, Kyle, when I was young, it was, I was a big guy, and I played, you know, 4 basketball games a week, and if I wasn't playing handball at lunch somewhere or something, and if I didn't have a handball game, I'd run 5 miles. I mean, it was, the amount I ate, it was disgusting. And yet I never gained a pound.
When I was, when I was in my teens, I used to eat whole pans of lasagna and whole key lime pies and never gained an ounce.
Yeah, it was, remember at the wedding, I'd find the skinniest girl I'd sit next to her, knowing because she wouldn't finish her dinner. I would get hers too. Now, how bad is that? Whether she was attractive or to talk to me was secondary to getting her dinner.
but here's the thing is that we, with all this cost push, in terms of, you know, quote unquote necessary things, at some point you reach the trigger point where we get the demand destruction.
Yeah.
Okay, and I don't know exactly where it is. And with energy, it's kind of interesting because, you know, with oil, you have a crack spread that you can shift a little bit, but not a whole lot. And so you get a certain amount of diesel, you get a certain amount of gasoline, and then, you know, you get all the other stuff that comes off the crack as well. And what I'm going to be very interested to see, you know, I've been on the road now for the last couple of weeks, and I'll be home in the next couple of days. But one thing that's very interesting is that there are no trucks out here slow rolling at all.
Really?
Okay, and I am, because the difference for me with a camper behind my truck is I can either get 9 miles a gallon or I can get 11. and it's simply a question of how heavy my right foot is.
Well, that's true. But, you know, I mentioned, I've never finished my story, but this Alan character, he sent me a thing. Yes, I have a chance to dig through. He said somebody went through and revamped the CPI to where it was in the 70s, and based on those, that CPI and that those percentages, we've been at 17% for a while.
Well, now, you got to be careful with that. That's John Williams and Shadow stats.
Yeah. But
the problem, Chief, is that he's been screaming about us being in the teens for the last 15 years, which would mean that everything would be six times as expensive as it was then, and it isn't. And so, I have all kinds of problems with the CPI report, as, you know, as we've talked about on the air. And there are intentional distortions in there. But you can go too far.
Yes.
Screaming on the other side, and you're still wrong. You're just wrong on the other side.
Well, I'll pick up two that I actually, one, you sentenced me to thinking, unbeknownst to you. You always talked about healthcare. So I went back, you know, 20 years, and in healthcare now, they probably have raised the prices. You know, I don't know as much about that as you do, but I'll throw them a bone and say that the price increases they've got correct. I'm sure you're going to say no, they haven't, but that's okay. But the idea that it's 20% of the GDP and it's 6% of the basket. If you went back to 2000 and said, okay, let's take the medical piece, and instead of 6%, we'll count it as 20. I'm going to say that would have added 1.5 to 2% a year, every year since the year 2000. Now that
absolutely. And so, you know, I mean, that's but that's not the only place.
I'm saying there's one example. Now this example, and this is a question: what are our guys, our government? What are they going to do with this home ownership number? I mean, last year the case shoulder came out 3 days ago. It was early this week. That their final number in the last 12 months, 21.5%, 21.6% increase in housing prices nationwide. And, oh, by the way, your mortgage rates in the last 4 months are up 40%. Now, and yet the report we're going to get today, I'll dig it up right when it comes out, the report we're going to get today is going to tell us that it's up 5% in the last 12 months. Now, how between the hospitalization for 20 years and the home ownership for the last 6 months to a year, just put those two numbers, correct those numbers, and where are we?
Well, here's the ugly part of the distortion that they put into owner's equivalent rent and house prices, okay? And that is this. That suppression is driven by one thing, and that is the negative slope of the curve for interest rates over the last 30 years.
Oh, not the last 5 months.
Well, guess what? Now it's going the other way. So what do you think is going to happen to OER over the next 2 to 3 years?
Well,
it's going to skyrocket.
Well, I'm saying, when are they going to recognize that?
It's a mathematical formula. As rates continue to go up on mortgages, OER rises by a lot. And so that suppression that we have, quote unquote, enjoyed over the last 30 years is going to turn into a millstone in the CPI number that is not going to go away. Those high rates you're seeing reported are going to accelerate, driven by that particular element in the report.
Okay,
there's no way around it.
All right, forget that for a second. Rent of primary residence. This isn't the owner's equivalent rent, just a plain old rent. Plain old rent is up 4.8%.
Yeah, which is nonsense.
And they got lodging away from home is up 20%.
Right.
So, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Which, by the way, is about right.
Yeah, which is probably about right. But they're not even the convoluted owner's rent, they're not just lying on that one, they're lying on a regular rent.
I guess my question is,
we gotta go break here, but my question is, and you know more about can you lie forever? Or when does this have to, yeah. You're making the argument, I think, that over the next year they're going to somehow make this right. I don't know, are they?
I don't think they're going to make it right, but I think that a lot of the mathematical stuff is going to go the wrong way on them.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with this number. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
What is your nationality?
I'm a drunkard.
And that makes Rick a citizen of the world.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Byrne on the board. This number is a clunker. 1.1 is the unadjusted number for May, which puts us 8.6 year over year, highest since 1981. So I'm just going to give you the U.S. numbers because the stuff overseas I'm still getting a delay in. But so right now we're talking about S&P futures are now down 45. Yeah, 45. Asia futures down 166. We've got, I'll give you the Asia numbers because they're close. Nikkei was down 422, 1.5%. Shanghai up 45, 1.4%. Hang Seng down 62.3%. I've got the 10-year is actually up to 3.75, so that's a big move up. Bonds have moved down. I don't quite understand why, with all this inflation, why gold can't go anywhere. But, Carl, you're looking at these numbers. I actually got them on my CPI site here from our government, way before I got them on TV. Can you explain to me, we have the unadjusted number for the month is 1.1, the adjusted number is 1.0. And now February, March, the number was 1.3, the adjusted number 1.2. What the hell is that adjustment? Where does that come from?
Oh, it's the same, it's the seasonal adjustment game, which is why annual is, you know, I mean, come on, Christmas comes at the same time every year, right?
Right.
It gets cold at the same time every year. It's called winter. You know, I mean, there's all kind of crazy heuristic games that get played by BLS. By the way, you know, I call them the Bureau of Lies and Scams, right?
Okay, that's a good one, yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. This is... Anybody that, I mean, you know, you said you thought maybe it had peaked. Well, would you like to modify your statement, sir?
No. What I said was if you put the money supply numbers over the inflation numbers.
I don't disagree with you on the money supply.
Yeah, I'm saying that the actual part has peaked. The flow through and these guys counting it and all the other stuff hasn't peaked at all.
And it won't for another 12 months or so.
They did.
And that's if there's no more stupidity.
Right. They did nudge. Well, I don't know that 2 months ago we saw a monthly number of 1.3. I don't know that you'll see over that again. Although if they start counting stuff, you will. You know.
But you just, you know, all you got to do is look at, if you look at some of the stuff inside the table, where the demand destruction comes is in things that are to some extent discretionary. Food is not discretionary. You have to buy it. You're looking at, on an annualized basis, food at home, talking 12%.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, I don't care what kind of food you happen to like, cereals and bakery products, meatball, I mean, if you're a meat eater like me, it's up a little more, but there is nowhere that it's under double digits.
Right. The only place you can, if you're willing to, go to some place and buy the whole pork loin or something, you can still get that. If you're willing to really move and do a lot of stuff yourself, do your carving yourself and everything, you can still hang in there. But boy, even the difference between buying the whole pork loin and buying the pork chops in the butcher section is like night and day.
Well, one of the things that's very interesting, it's been going on now for about 6 months, and I don't see any sign it's going to stop, is that the grocers are doing things like sticking, you know, 80-20 ground round out there at $6 a pound. It doesn't sell. And then if you catch it right, you can get 3-pound chubs for, you know, 3.5, right? It's 3 days before expiration, so into the freezer it goes. But you have to catch those at the right time. If you don't, or you just are not equipped to, you know, you don't have a freezer, whatever have you, oh man, are you, you know, you're getting into the backside like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So, and the other thing that's really nasty is that just in the last couple of weeks on this trip, I've seen another 10% go on gas prices. Okay, just in the last 2 weeks.
Right. Well, actually, the place by me in North and Division, you know where that is?
Yeah.
No, North and Division run parallel. North and Elston, who prides himself on being the highest in the city. In the last 24 hours, he's actually come down 15 cents.
I haven't seen any of that here. I'll tell you one thing, though, that's really weird, and I don't quite understand this. In Wyoming, and only in Wyoming, I was able to buy E85 for $3.
Really? It's the same price as gas here.
Now, my truck can burn it.
It's the same as gas here. It's
well, I know. My truck can burn E85. Now, it does get less mileage because there's less energy in it. It's about a 15% difference. But when somebody's going to sell it to you for 30% less money...
We had a guy, you know, I think I told you this before, and of course, you argued with me, which makes you special. That's why I love you. We had a guy from the Petroleum Institute on. And I asked him. I said, hey, Joe, what's the best... He goes, do the math, and the best for your motor, if we have one like yours, the best for your motor in terms of power and in terms of mileage, is, especially V85, is appreciably cheaper. You want it about 30% alcohol and 70% gas. So if you put in, if you got a 40-gallon tank like me, you want to put in, if I'm doing the math in my head, since you're getting 10% on the regular stuff, right? Fill it up with like 32 gallons and then use the other 8 of E85. And that's your optimal spot.
Yeah, the thing is that there's... So ethanol has a higher octane naturally than gasoline does. So if your engine can take advantage of it, then it can run more timing advance, and that negates some of the BTU penalty. Not all of it, but it can run a higher effective compression ratio, assuming your engine knows how to do it. The engine in my truck does not know how to take advantage of that. So in very hot conditions, it would matter because it wouldn't have to retard timing so much to avoid detonation. But generally, I mean, I have a lot of instrumentation in the truck because, you know, when you're trying to chase every tenth of a mile per gallon because of the cost of the fuel, you know, you're looking at, you know, where's your mass airflow and all this other stuff. And I can see all this data in real time. And, but, I mean, yeah, there's a mileage penalty running the E85, but if you're going to sell it to me for $3, I'm going to buy it.
Oh,
especially when the gas is $4.50 plus.
Well, here last week, I paid $5.55 for the gas. I think the E85 was like $5.20. There's no bargain there.
Well, that's and you know, here's what I don't understand, Chief. You get somebody is gouging to a severe degree on that.
Oh yeah.
Because tell me how I just bought two tanks of this stuff in the last 24 hours, $3 a gallon in Wyoming.
The taxes here are to the moment. Hey, Kyle, we got some time here, but I was just in a meeting with my judge buddies and attorney buddies, and they go, you know, these prices aren't stopping anybody. You know, they were just down in Florida, and you can't get in the best restaurants. And you don't want to be the contrary knuckleheaded at every table you're at. I said, you know, you can't really go by that. I mean, because you really don't, there's restaurants that haven't reopened after COVID, so the guys that are left are going to get a little more crowds. I mean, you know, there's no real way of putting your finger on this by observation. And the reason why I say this, I've never told you this story. If I did, I'm sorry, I'm repeating, but one of Dr. J's birthdays was at this little restaurant on the west side. I think it was the Sardine Play, or whatever. It was a nice little place, a little fish place, hence the name Sardine. And maybe 15 tables, bar, 10 people. So after dinner, we're sitting down, and Jan was talking about how, you know, this is back in 2008, probably. He goes, oh, you know, the economy's funny. All these places are all jammed, blah, blah, blah. So this guy sits next to me, and he goes, hey, you know, your buddy's full of crap. I go, why is that exactly? By the way, who are you? He goes, well, I'm the owner. I'm like, okay. He says, you know, he's right that the observation, you obviously can tell if there's nobody there or it's full. He said, but tonight, he goes, when you guys came in, we were, quote, full. He said, my business is down 20% since this all started. He goes, you right. Never know. If you walked away from here, you'd say I'm doing fine. He goes, actually, we're doing okay. He said, but I'm down like 8% people and 12% ticket. You can't notice 8% people less. And, oh, by the way, you sure as hell can't notice 12% ticket less. He goes, I saw a lot of wine here. You guys just had some. $30 a bottle. It's good stuff. It's a good price. He goes, I haven't sold a $60 bottle in 3 weeks. I used to sell one of them a night. He goes, the people who always got an after dinner drink, now they don't. I mean, or, you know.
Well, and it's, yeah, and that's the thing. And I mean, it's like, you know, I looked just for grins and giggles a few days ago. I looked at, okay, I want a room in Gatlinburg, you know, right down the road from where I live, for tonight, right now. And rooms that in summer, any summertime, middle of the week, any summertime, $120 to $150, $60.
Yeah. I mean, where?
Now that's middle of winter pricing when half the places are shut down. So now, is it going to stay there? No, because like I just pulled it up again while you were talking, and you know, now it's about $100, okay? Well, guess what? That's still $20-$25 cheaper than it was last year for the same room at the same time. And, you know, on the weekends, are people still coming in and filling up the place? Yeah, they are. But are they staying for the whole week? No, they're cutting it back. You know, so now, all right, I'm here Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I go home. Why do I go home? Because I can't afford the extra, you know, $200 for the next two nights.
Yeah, I mean, it squeezes out, and I guess I was talking earlier with, when you guys both were cut off, or Kevin and Lou were cut off, is it the whole economic? Why I love the study of it is I don't quite get probably because people haven't enough classes, I guess. They don't appreciate what goes on in an economy like ours, the millions and millions of economic decisions that are made like every minute in this country. It's,
right.
It's really hard to put your finger on, oh, nobody's doing that or everybody's doing that. No. You can't use words like nobody and everybody. It's because it's very gradual. It's very, my brother has a, well, lives up down in Evergreen Park, and there's a gas station there, and it's reasonably, it's been there for a long time, and he's reasonably competitive. He goes up and gets some gas in his truck, and he's talking to the guy. The guy goes, my business is horrible. And he goes, what are you talking about? He goes, nobody's buying gas. Well, nobody. He goes, less people are buying gas, but also I make my money, because he knows my brother's a pretty smart guy. He goes, you know, you make your money inside. The amount of the amount of coffees, waters, you know, Cheetos that is dropped dramatically because people aren't coming in. If they are, they're looking at the thing on the gas and they're passing up the jerky or something. They're not saying, I can't afford jerky. I just put $100 in the tank. Because unless you're in business, unless you see this happen and you see people make a move towards something in the exit aisle and in the grocery store and all of a sudden pull their hand back, where maybe a month ago they wouldn't have. Unless you see all that, it's really hard to get a feel. Because everybody, if you put $100 in your tank when it used to be 60, the 40's coming out of someplace, Carl, right?
I mean, Chief, I just stuck 110 in the tank here.
Two hours ago. I had a new roll in the Suburban.
I mean, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. You know what? That was a $60 fill-up last year.
Well, last week was a new low at $5.55. The pump shut off at $100. Not even a half a tank in the Suburban.
Well, you know what's really crazy. So the law, I like the Love's travel stops in general, right? I always have. I like the layout. They're clean. They're well maintained. Things just work. I just prefer them as a brand. Well, guess what? Now they're pre-authorizing 175 on every card you swipe in their pumps.
Well, 100 doesn't get you anywhere.
Well, no. The standard for years, when you go into a gas station, if you've got your phone set up to bing you every time some merchant hits your card with an authorization or a charge, the standard is they pre-auth $1, make sure the card's good, and then whatever you pump, okay, that's what they charge up. Well, Love's is now hitting your card with a $175 hold.
Really?
And and they're doing it everywhere. It's everywhere in this country. I've been across the entire United States in the last week, and they are doing it every single place. It's not in one region. It's everywhere. And the only thing I can come up with is that they were hitting people's cards at that $1 pre-auth, and then they run $150 worth of fuel into the truck, and when they go try to present the $150 charge, it bounces because they're over limit.
You know, you just answered me a question that I didn't know the answer forever. And one of my credit cards, I had a bunch of prize money on there, whatever you want to call it. They sent me a debit card, a Visa card, for $100. And I spent like 40 of it someplace. And then I went to get the rest in gas, and it kept telling me there was nothing there because they must try and pre-charge 100 before, to see if there's 100 on your card, before they let you pump it up, and I didn't. It kept telling me. So finally I had to go inside, and the lady just charged me for the 60, and I could pump it then. Is that what's happening?
Right. Well, now, see, normally the standard at all the travel centers, pretty much every gas station everywhere, has been to pull a $1 pre-auth just to make sure the number's good. And then, they put the charge through for however much it is when you get done pumping. But like I said, just in the last month, this has changed because the last trip I took, Love's was doing it like everywhere else. You get hit, for a dollar. And I've got, my cards are set up so that it's, you touch that account and it bings on my phone instantly. So before I even get the nozzle out of the holster, it's, I've got it on the phone. It says it's, pre-auth for a dollar at this place. Well, now, and here's where the problem's going to come in for a lot of people. Let's say that you have a relatively low limit card because you don't have a lot of credit, right? So you got a $500 limit on your credit card or a $1,000 limit on your credit card. And you go across the country and you have a car. You don't have a truck. You go into a Love's and they bang you with three or four of those pre-auths. Your card's going to get declined and you have plenty of purchasing power.
Really?
Yep, because that hold sits until the batch closes, which typically takes 48 hours.
Ah. All right, so that's why my debit card didn't go anywhere, or wherever that card was.
Right, exactly. And it will be released when the actual charge that matches the pre-auth goes through with the same transaction ID, then it gets released. But until then, that's held against your account. And if you do that on a debit card, it's even worse because that's held against your bank balance.
Well, Kyle, what are guys that are in, like, the towboat industry where a barge towboat can get hold 15,000 gallons? I mean, good Lord, what kind of a drink is that? It's $6 a throw.
Well, you know, yeah, not just... I used to have a 45-foot header that had 200-300-gallon saddle tanks, and so 600 gallons fill that sucker up.
I bet you're happy that thing's gone.
Well, I certainly wouldn't be owning it with fuel prices like this.
Well, you wouldn't be driving it. You'd just be partying on the boat.
Well, yeah, you push the button to start it, and you know, $100 goes vacuumed out of your wallet.
Well, so what do you? I mean, as we work our S&P futures now down 52. By the way, Nasdaq down 195. This on top of a day we were down 95 yesterday. This is butt ugly, Carl. This is really butt ugly.
Well, you know, if we close on the lows today, be careful on Monday.
Yeah, I'm. Well, we're on the Qs. We're 294 now pre market. We hit 282 twice on the old lows a couple of weeks ago. I don't know, I'm not a technical guy, but I just, you know, you listen to everybody who's on the TV, and everybody still is trying to, you know, they're touts basically. I would like, you know, most of my people are long. We came in today a little long, not very long. We got puts right there. We have virtually no downside exposure, but we're down here today, we're not going to win today. So if everybody else loses 5% and we lose 0.5%, it's still a lose. It's still a loss, right?
Right.
But still, I mean, at the end of the day, we can adjust, and if it bounces back a little bit, we'll be there. But I still haven't, Carl, at the price of the puts, I still haven't bought anybody any extra puts unless they really wanted them. I mean, it's not like we're setting up short here or anything. I'm a little concerned as to why when all this inflation, why the metals keep going down when everything else is going up, which is, I don't know if some government's leaning on it or what, but it seems like kind of a contrived market because last time we had inflation, gold went up every day, now it doesn't go anywhere. This is starting to cause layoffs places. We're starting to see business scrunch. I mean, how we're not going to be in a recession here? This quarter is not going to be positive, is it? The Atlanta Fed goes down every day. They're down to 0.9. Last quarter was. I mean, I guess I don't want to. How do I say this? And you, I think you're the same way, even though you're a little more outspoken than me. We don't want to be doggy downers and constantly say things are bad every day. Not because it's bad radio, but B, neither one of us. You know, we don't want to be the person to say you'll never make it, we'll never get there. But by the same token, until people recognize where we are, you're never going to fix it. If you're on the bus and you got a broken leg and they come over to keep giving you pills and saying you're okay, no, unless you realize I got a broken leg and set the damn thing and put a cash on it, we're not going anywhere. You can tell me, you can blow smoke up my behind all you want and give me morphine, but until you recognize it's a broken leg and you fix it, we're not going anywhere. That's kind of where I am. And where are you on this?
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, until we see some recognition within the halls of Congress that what you spend must be paid for, you must tax it first. The only exception to that is in certain areas of infrastructure where by making that expenditure, you build efficiency in the economy. So it takes less of something later on to do the same thing. So if you have a bridge that's a bottleneck, and everybody has to go 20 miles an hour because the traffic's backed up for, you know, 10 miles behind it. You make it a four-lane bridge, and now traffic goes through normal speed. Now the trucker, you know, each truck that goes across that bridge now burns a quarter of a gallon less diesel fuel sitting waiting to get across the bridge. Okay? Well, over time, this is efficiency. That is productivity gain. And that means that the cost of doing that with the bridge may very well actually be negative on the price level in the economy, even though you had to spend the money. But for everything else, for all the other, you know, glad-handing nonsense that the government does, it increases the price level.
Yeah, but you're,
and
you're,
until that stops, the problem is not going to go away, Chief. And there is no—I don't care which party you're talking about. Nobody is talking about that.
Yeah, but you're talking about a. First of all, I agree with you, which you're not supposed to on radio. I agree with you, but you're talking about a very narrow. I mean, how can I put this? If you build Hoover Dam or the Golden Gate Bridge, and you borrow the money, you get a toll, or in Hoover Dam's case, you're selling electricity, and you pay that off over time. You didn't affect the price level because you borrowed the money. You didn't just print it, right? So, and then it got
except that when you paid all the people to work, you increase demand in the local economy, which of course does increase price level.
But I mean, the point is, you didn't print the money. You borrowed it and you made a terrific investment.
You ever pay it back, Chief. It never happens today.
Oh, they paid back the Golden Gate Bridge stuff. They paid back
Hoover
Dam.
Okay, all right. So how much of the money that the federal government has borrowed in the last 30 years, 40 years has been paid back?
Oh, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about specific. What I'm trying to get to is if you have a two-lane bridge that all of a sudden you need a three-lane, and you put the money in there, and you do it efficiently, and now it's three-lane, and everybody can go faster, and the commerce around there grows by a significant portion. Could that be considered a terrific investment, however you did it?
And the answer is yes. And that's what I'm saying, is that there are things that the government can spend money on that, even though they're spending it in quote-unquote deficit, the net impact is positive.
But
it's not bad, it's good.
Right, the critique I'm given is right now the Infrastructure Act is not for that. It's for taking the two-lane bridge that's been allowed to degrade through the lack of maintenance for 25 years and fixing it before it falls down, where at the end of the day you're still left with the two-lane bridge. You haven't gained anything. In fact, you spent a year where people in one lane, the traffic jams even longer. I'm saying,
But because of the patronage and the garbage that goes on in D.C. and with all the contractors, half the money got stolen and didn't actually go to repairing the bridge.
Well, explain to me this. If we're so blowing smoke out our behind to make everything electric, my guys at Pullman, this is 1977 I was there, Carl, my guys at Pullman would have told you that one of the most efficient things you could do, especially in the Chicago area, where you used to have so much power, electric power, it was scary before you told coal plant, I'm not getting into that. But he said the smartest thing we could have done is taken the Burlington and Northwestern lines and electrified those lines. Except for a few days a year where you get the ice storms, because electricity is cleaner, it's more efficient, it's faster because there's a motor on every axle. He goes, people love riding on electric trains rather than having a diesel locomotive pull. He goes, we could have done that. We didn't. And now none of this bill, we're forcing people to get cars. There's the stuff we should electrify. I mean, I'm going to say that if you drive across I-40, old Route 66, you're going to see the Santa Fe tracks off to your north. And I'm going to say the relentless sun and wind out there, as you know, I'm not for driving everybody to be electric no matter what. But out there, you and I should be able to almost have a private business where, drop me the freight in Topeka, Kansas. I'll take it all the way to California. I'll have my own solar collectors, my own everything. I'm gonna have somebody make me a fleet of 200 electric locomotives. Take the diesels off when you get here. I'll pull it the rest of the way on free energy, damn near.
Except it's not.
Well, I mean, it costs something. I'm saying there are pockets here that we should have been electrified years ago.
Yeah, except, Chief, the problem is that it doesn't, the math, when you look at the entirety of the process, it doesn't pencil out. It would be nice if it did. Now, if we had built LFTR nuclear, which we knew how to do in the 1960s, we just never bothered finishing the engineering to turn it into a productive thing, we'd have synfuel, we'd have electrical power.
I agree.
I don't know if it would be materially cheaper than we have now, about the same price or a little bit more expensive. But what I do know is there'd be a floor on the price. One of the problems that we have right now is that we said we can't use coal, okay, because coal is nasty. Well, coal happens to be very abundant, and it has one overriding beneficial quality to it, and that is if you look at a long-term price chart, you will see that the pricing on that material is remarkably stable over very long periods of time. Natural gas is not.
Well, that's because
it has had multiple spikes with price factors of 10 from top to bottom. How do you possibly plan for what something's going to cost, in this case electrical power, if it's produced from natural gas, with that kind of a price fluctuation?
I don't disagree.
Plus, how do you do it?
We got a dash here, bud, but plus we have, what, 4 centuries of, or maybe more than centuries of coal in this country. We don't have that much.
500 years worth at a 1% population growth rate.
Yeah. All right, bud. Have a good weekend. Get back safe. You're walking a commercial for Chevy Suburbans, or do you have a GMC?
Alright, time to go.
Alright, bud, take care. Let's be futures down 65. This is not good. Be back on Monday.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
See you guys later, if I still have a job.